Hello, my name is Aaliyah Kilpatrick, and welcome to the Black Woman and Political Leadership Podcast. Local government is vital for organizing. Without it, people would not be able to enact change in their own communities. I was born and raised in Syracuse, New York, and I had the wonderful opportunity to speak with Deputy Mayor Ms. Sharon Owens of Syracuse. Before we dive into our conversation, it is important that we have an understanding of what the city of Syracuse is, some of its challenges, and the progress that we have made. Syracuse, New York, as central New York City with a population of about 160,000 people, has been at the top of national news for some years because of its gun violence and segregated city. However, local government officials aim to combat these narratives with positive change. Syracuse once had a well-known, thriving Black community. However, when the I-81 highway was built in 1959, cutting through the heart of the Black community, it left the city's Black community decimated. The highway essentially splits the city of Syracuse between Syracuse University and the quote-unquote projects. The highway brings semi-trucks that give off harmful exhaust, affecting the health of the residents living near the highway. Moreover, according to The Atlantic, Syracuse, New York has almost two-thirds of the Black population living in high-poverty neighborhoods, and with 40% or more of the residents living below the federal poverty threshold. Syracuse also has the highest rates of both Black and Hispanic concentrations of poverty in the nation. In recent years, there have been plans to tear down the I-81 highway and create a boulevard-type passing for travelers. This has received some major pushback from residents that are living in the suburbs. And these residents that are living in the suburbs are majority white. Me personally, being from a suburb of Syracuse, I was often surrounded by predominantly white people, and this impacted my educational experience and the socialization experience. The city of Syracuse has also been plagued with gun violence, as I mentioned earlier. According to Spectrum Local News, Syracuse Mayor Ben Walsh's administration recently unveiled a $1 million proposal to lower gun violence and many other initiatives. And they also wanted to make it clear that a lot of the gun violence does not come from gang members. However, it comes from different types of violence. One of these initiatives also includes paying gang members a weekly stipend to not break the law in order to work toward turning their life around. These historical challenges are something that Deputy Mayor Sharon Owens comes into contact with on the daily. She worked to combat this using her leadership style and her expertise. I had the wonderful opportunity to sit down with Ms. Sharon Owens, the Deputy Mayor of Syracuse, to talk about leadership and advice she has for young women. To give a brief introduction, Ms. Owens is a graduate of Syracuse University, where she competed on the Syracuse University track and field team. Since graduating in 1985, she has redirected her passion to complete and achieve into multiple public service organizations. Before turning her energy into civic office in 2010, Ms. Sharon Owens invested over 20 years at the Dunbar Center, Jubilee Homes, and more. Let's dive right into the conversation. Okay. Hello. So my name is Aaliyah Kilpatrick. And first question, I would like for you to tell us who you are, your leadership story, and how did you come to leadership?
So my name is Sharon Owens, Deputy Mayor of the City of Syracuse. My leadership story started in the not-for-profit world. So out of Syracuse University, I connected with community-based organizations. My first was the Dunbar Association under the leadership of Janice Spates. And it was then that I really began to work with the community on the south side, right around the housing authority over there, and learned a lot through Jan Spates and the team over there. I started there as an intern from Syracuse University. My plan of life, which your plan never works out to be your plan, or you try to get as close as possible, is that I was an economics major, and I knew I was going to be on Wall Street, and that's what I wanted to do. Yes. Until I did that summer internship.
Wow.
And so really that experience, and at that time I wasn't interested in changing my major, but I found that economics really is more than numbers and, mm-hmm. and analytics, but really is about strategic planning and strategic yes. analysis. And so that really helped me as I got into not-for-profit world. And I ended up at Dunbar Peace Incorporated, mm-hmm. Oh my goodness, Southwest Community Center, Jubilee Homes, Home Headquarters, and after Home Headquarters, that is when I, was asked to come on to the Minor Administration. Mm-hmm. And I became the Deputy Commissioner of Neighborhood and Business Development. And in that position, I was responsible for overseeing our HUD, our U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development grant, mm-hmm. CDBG. CDBG is Community Development.
Yep, Community Development Block Grant Program.
And so all of that is housing, mm-hmm. Community renewal. And my counterpart at that time, the Deputy Commissioner of Business Development, was Ben Walsh. Mm-hmm. And so we worked during the minor administration. I was there about 3 years. And then Jesse Dowdell mm-hmm. retired. And so I felt like, oh man, this is an opportunity for me to go back home. And to really, because at that time, the Southwest Community Center, which was an important part of our cultural aspect here in Syracuse, was really struggling. Mm-hmm. So I felt like it was an opportunity to go yeah. back home and to really have an impact on what was going on at Southwest Community Center. So I left the minor administration in 2013, mm-hmm. went to become the director at Southwest. And I think we really transformed the organization. We went from maybe like a $3 million budget to about $5.2 million wow. in like 3 years. And then Ben Walsh ran for office. When I left the minor administration, I left swearing I would never come back to government. But then Ben Walsh was elected. We had an experience working together. And he said, Sharon. And I said, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to come back. But I don't want to come back in department level.
Yeah.
I want to be in a senior capacity in City Hall so I can evoke policy. Mm-hmm. And so that's how he said that I got the position for you, and that's how I became deputy mayor. So when I think about my political, I don't use that. I've never been a politician. Mm-hmm. I'm not an elected individual. I'm appointed.
Yeah.
And so in that capacity, my oversight here is everything needed by the mayor's office. So I do a lot of community-based stuff still in mm-hmm. line with my not-for-profit history. But my oversight here is police department, the fire department, and the neighborhood and business development mm-hmm. department, which also includes housing, business development, code enforcement, the permitting department, all of the above. Mm-hmm. So I think about to my counterpart in the senior team, Corey Driscoll, does a lot of the forward-facing service delivery around infrastructure, roads, and waterways, yeah. and engineering-related things. I'm the people part. So housing, public safety, business development, mm-hmm. that's everything that I do. Diversity and inclusion, mm-hmm. That's what I oversee.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
That was a very long answer.
No, it was amazing. I loved all of it. So just moving on to like the second question. Mm-hmm. So you talked a little bit about how, like, you know, you're not a politician, but you do a lot of business development, like a lot of like forward-facing things. So like as a woman, do you think there are any better issues that you're able to address? And do you use like a gender lens when solving problems or not? Like,
yeah, I mean, in the senior team, our senior team is half of the senior team is women, mm-hmm. but I'm the only Black woman. Mm-hmm. And so many times, and I really like working for the mayor because he grasps on this perspective that I bring, not only as a woman, but a Black woman,
yeah.
but also the history of work that I've done in the community. Yes. So my perspective is always coming from the question of, okay, if we're doing that, how is it benefiting? And I'm blessed to be with a team that is always thinking about how is that helping, and even in the helping, who are we missing, mm-hmm. and what can we do to alleviate the hardship that people are going through right now. Right now, the biggest things for us right now are the Skyline Apartments,
yeah.
the green properties. So when I think of my perspective coming from where my history has come from, it is absolutely from the perspective and the team's perspective that everything we're doing, we need to do for the benefit of the people who are living in those buildings.
Yes, exactly. Speaking of the Skyline Apartments, this complex has been at the top of local Syracuse news for some time. The apartments were deemed unfit because tenants don't have water. The city ordered rent not to be paid to the owners until the water is restored. A resident went on record saying it's really horrible, and it has led them to washing with water that feels like they were poured over ice. There are plans to invest up to $7.7 million on a court-approved renovation plan so extensive that it will require moving tenants back and forth between the buildings as of March 29, 2023. The renovations will be so extensive that the Clear Investment Group plans to vacate the 352-unit Skyline within about 6 months, among other things that will allow the entire building to be fumigated. Tenants at the Skyline Apartments who are in good standing will be offered comparable apartments in the James or Chestnut Crossing at the same rent they pay now while the repairs are undertaken, the company said. Later, they will have the option to move back into the Skyline Apartments. Think about all the things that you have to grapple with as the deputy mayor and all the challenges that you have to face. I'm wondering, how do you balance your personal life and professional? And what is your advice, you know, young girls trying to figure out how they can balance their lives?
First, how do I balance my life? I'm not the best at it. I realize now that work days that go till 7 and 8 o'clock has been a norm for me. People talk about being in government that we do a lot of community meetings and they're like, Sharon, you work till 7 or 8 o'clock. And I'm like, this is not new for me. In community-based work, you meet the community when they're out of work. So you meet the community at night. And so my family has adjusted to my incredibly crazy schedule. I love them. I'm blessed to have them. I'm blessed to have my children who have only known this mom from not-for-profit even to now and being in the community. And my husband is just amazing because he just, I'm here to support you. What I have, I'm a horrible insomniac and I'm trying to figure out the mechanisms to help me rest so I can be the best I can be. Just always thinking, mind always going, phone always going off. And so I'm learning some practices that are helping me to fall asleep. My problem is staying asleep during the course of the night. So, you know, just having a core group of people that I can be myself around. My inner circle is very small. It starts with my family, and then it reaches out to maybe a handful of people. And it is those people who, when I speak to them, I don't have to talk to them like Sharon Owens, deputy mayor. I'm talking to them like Sharon, you know, and being able to just that first, you know, bounce ideas off of that type of thing. And they'll be real with me. You know, it doesn't benefit me to have yes people around me. I need people that are going to say, what are you thinking? Or why are you doing that? Or try this. And that benefits me. I'm careful about how to give younger people an advice because I'm still trying to figure it out myself. But the advice that I will give any young woman is be true to you. Whatever it is that you desire to do and it is your passion and that is what you want to do, pursue it. Find mentors. I think my success have not been heavily because of I'm the smartest person in the room. I never want to be the smartest person in the room. If that's the case, I'm in the wrong room. But it has been because I have surrounded myself with mentors who have gone the path that I've gone, and I listen to them. Now, I may glean some things from them and then leave some things away, but I never disregard the wisdom of the people who came before me. And so always have peers of your own who will tell you the truth, and then have a network of mentors who will guide you.
Thank you so much. So looking at like the next question, how would you, what is the difference you would say between like a woman's leadership style and a men's leadership style, and then how would you describe your own leadership style?
That's a tricky question, and it's a question you'd be careful to ask in mixed company.
Yes.
Because sometimes women, we're talking as two women, and I can be honest that everything that comprises a woman, because we come from different experiences, we're moms, we're many of us are innately nurturers.
Mm-hmm.
Nurturers. So I think that is a component of who we are, but the challenge for that is being able to balance, because it can be seen as a weakness.
Yeah.
Depending on which room or which office you sit in. So that approach to empathy is a big part of who I am and how I manage and who I am. And it is a passion of mine. Emotions for me are a big part of what drives me, but sometimes it is a hindrance for me because, and this is just me, and sometimes it is because it's seen as a weakness. But in actuality, if I have to shut the door and cry because I'm so angry that I'm ready to just shake the room.
Yeah.
So this is how I release. It has nothing to do with me being a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that label is placed on women about being emotional or... but the strongest women I know can stand toe-to-toe and be very analytical and fact driven in their message, and have behind those words the innate part of us as caregivers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Because in this public service realm, people forget the second part of public service.
Mm-hmm.
It is service. It is, we are here as public service, not public servants. Now, does that mean people have the right to abuse us or mistreat us or yell at us and all of that? No, you don't. But many people get into government work not forgetting the part of it about service. We are public servants. Your ambition to be in a law office in New York City, you're doing the work for service to the constituents of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're there.
Yeah.
If that is not ingrained in you, you should not do municipal work.
Exactly. Thank you. In terms of like what your leadership thinking is, mm-hmm. does anything change, do you think, when women get political power? Like, for example, one of the things we learn a lot about is how Africa has had like a few more women presidents, mm-hmm. I mean, more than the United States has ever had. And what do you think the history of that is? And what do you think we should do to enter that history of change in the future, more specifically for the United States?
I think that... this country prides itself on being a melting pot, but it doesn't readily dip a spoon into that melting pot to glean from it all the perspectives that a melting pot brings. The diversity, and that word is so commonly used now, but the complexity that every language and ethnicity and sex around sexuality and identity bring to the table of a conversation. There is no way that any conversation or any policy or any methodology to reach a conclusion around policy or law or service provision can be one-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are not a one-dimensional society.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite Audre Lorde quotes is, we do not have, and I'm going to butcher it, we do not have one-dimensional solutions because we're not one-dimensional people.
Yeah.
There's no way. It has to be multifaceted.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a climate right now where people are so polarized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is... it's a scary time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about when my mom tells me the stories when she was growing up as a young woman and an activist and engaged, and she sees what's going on now. It's just like, who set the clock back of what we're experiencing right now? And the boldness of the discriminatory language and approach to how, you know, living in Florida right now, you know. I visit, spend a week, and then I'm back to New York State. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the laws. What just happened in Tennessee?
Right.
Those two individuals were elected by the people of Tennessee.
Exactly.
And in an effort to support what they're asking for in gun violence, you are actually voted off the council that you were appointed, elected to? It's unimaginable to me. And comparing it to January 6th. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. And the entire world is watching the United States as the so-called birthplace of democracy, mm-hmm. and watching what's going on here right now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Incredible. I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. Okay. I got it. Thank you. So I just have two more questions left. So this one's a little bit longer, but okay. So do you feel that women in positions of power are scrutinized more heavily on issues such as competence, but also issues like physical appearance, clothing, family? And I know you mentioned, talked a little bit about, like, you know, your work-life balance, but have you had any experience with this? Could you give examples of this?
Women are always objectified.
Mm-hmm.
And just like black people, we find ourselves in a position that we always have to be the teachers about what you say and don't say to women. And it is exhausting because we should all should just be treated equally as human beings. So do I feel at this stage in my life when I walk into a room, it depends on the room that I walk into, mm-hmm. whether or not, I never know if I'm seen as Sharon, just Sharon.
Yeah.
Now I have Sharon Deputy Mayor, and then it's Sharon Deputy Mayor, black woman.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never know which aspect of all of that a person is seeking to glean from. As long as every aspect of who I am is honored, not agreed with, but honored and respected, then we can have a conversation and debate, because that's what we do, because we're not going to agree on everything.
Yeah.
But can you say the question one more time?
Yeah. So do you feel like women in positions of power are scrutinized more heavily on issues such as, like, competence, but also issues like physical appearance, clothing, and family?
It really depends on the setting you're going into.
Mm-hmm.
Like people think alike, when you're going into... Particularly, for example, if I go into a room and it's the first time, I always present myself. It was amazing. I walked outside of City Hall one time, mm-hmm. and I was going to the coffee shop, and I walked out the door, and a woman was pulling up. She had done some business at City Hall, and she said to me, "Hi." And I was like, "Hi." And she was like, "You don't know me. Don't worry about it. You don't know me. But I just want to tell you that you represent yourself well every time." And I said to myself, I just had, like, that's my mama moment.
Mm-hmm.
We always have to, in this country, to put ourselves in a position, to put ourselves in a position where all of this brilliance can be gleaned and be used. You got to put yourself in a position where you can, first of all, how do I want to say this? You're going to be sized up when you walk into the room.
Yeah.
By the fact that you are black, by the fact that you are a woman, by the fact that I work for government, All of the tags, stickies that are on me, invisible stickies that I don't know about from the perspective of other people. So when that woman said that to me, what I gleaned from that was cultural.
Mm-hmm.
You are doing a good job. You are representing our people,
mm-hmm.
and yourself. I could have put my mother in that car.
Yeah.
And felt like that is important to me. Now, some people say, I don't care what anybody thinks. And that's their perspective. And that's a, but for what I need to do, I need to be able to walk in that room.
Mm-hmm.
Today, for example, it's Friday. It's Good Friday. I'm only going to be here for a half hour. And I was like, I really want to put some jeans on. But I am talking to a young woman studying law at Cornell. No, I don't have a full suit on. But no, she's not going to walk in on me because I was in a sweatsuit mood. But no, I knew who my audience was going to be. So I need to be, ensure I'm prepared. Not just by what I wear, but being attentive and being in the moment with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you are going to move on and you could either say, I don't know who that lady is that they put in that position, or say, wow. And that has to do with the moment I walk into the room and you feel heard.
Mm-hmm.
You feel I know what the heck I'm talking about. And sitting in this seat was like, yeah, okay, city government, okay, we got our problems, but I feel better about it
because
I know she's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm working with a man who I definitely have his ear,
mm-hmm.
without question. And so when I think about work-life balance, when I'm family mode, I'm family mode.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna catch me in the supermarket with my family, and I'm going there. Hey, I hope you recognize my face because I'm not. You know, I'm gonna be. When you're with your family, you can be the you.
Yeah.
That you're not gonna be at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much. So just the last question. So I know you said a little bit earlier you're careful about giving advice, but what advice can you give to the next generation of leaders?
First, I'll say that it's always important to have a plan and a strategy for mm-hmm. yourself. Understand that I'm in this seat right now from a winding road that did not have this seat anywhere in my trajectory.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in this seat because the path that I set on myself for myself, I followed that path. I followed the detours. There were distractions, got back on the path, keeping myself focused on what I want to do, being true to myself, not allowing other people to distract me to off of my path to make decisions that are going to harm me.
Yeah.
Not as the person I choose to be or the person, the title I think I'm striving for, but me.
Yeah.
Me. I have to be whole. How can I help anyone else if I'm not confident or feel whole in who I am? And I want to be careful about the word confidence.
Mm-hmm.
This human body is full of insecurities. Yeah. Full of them. Full of insecurities. Study the area that of your expertise. Learn as much as possible about it. Again, bring mentors around you who have walked the walk before you and can give you guidance on the pitfalls. Have that inner circle of confidence. Of confidence. Not yes people, confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You're blessed. You have a strong family. Never take that for granted. There are so many people who do not have that.
Mm-hmm.
And just the support that family brings for you. And be patient,
mm-hmm.
which is hard. The road to this seat started in 1985.
Mm-hmm.
Be patient. On this road of highs and lows, but it is a road that's going to take you.
Mm-hmm.
Your focus is on being a lawyer. You're going to be in the hub of everything going on in New York State.
Yes.
In the law office there. Glean everything you can from it. Understand in the office, even in a legal office, you're going to hear or see some things that you're like, these people should know better than this. You will find yourself in positions where do I say something? Do I not say something? Mm-hmm. And the wisdom that you'll gather is because of the reputation that you will acquire as a strong worker who knows her stuff, mm-hmm. your word will hold weight. Mm-hmm. And your perspective will hold weight. Many times we have people that throw cocktail bottles and bang the table. Get your facts together. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're clear on what you're saying mm-hmm. when you say it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Oh, my God.
That's the last question. And I would really love to thank Ms. Sharon Owens for taking time out of her busy schedule to come and talk to me. Rethinking leadership and responsibility so that it includes public service is essential for all government employees. Leadership style is not monolithic. It changes from person to person. And I think with Ms. Sharon Owens' amazing perspective, we were able to learn so much from her and really take her advice and wisdom with all of us today. Thank you so much for listening.